Welcome into the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. I'm Ryan Lavner, and in this edition, Rex Hoggard and I break down in forensic detail the six picks who will round out the U.S. Ryder Cup team. And Rex and I, even though the U.S. leadership is not going to consult us, we will start working on some potential pairings. We'll also recap the Tour Championship, which Rex covered, as well as make our picks for PGA Tour Player of the Year. Speaking of which, John Rahm has had an outstanding run in his first year with Callaway. He's number one in the world, won his first major, and that's just part of the story. John finished number one on tour this season in total driving, scoring average, money earned, and top 10 finishes. Rahm has all Callaway equipment in the bag, including an Epic Speed driver and a Chrome Soft X golf ball. Plus, at the Solheim Cup, Carlota Segonda, Georgia Hall, and Madeline Sagstrom all competed for the victorious European team while using Callaway clubs. Now, for more information, visit CallawayGolf.com. Rex, we just signed off an hour-long Ryder Cup press conference with Captain Steve Stricker, as well as his six captain's picks, which were Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Tony Finau, Scotty Scheffler, Daniel Berger, and Harris English. Those are the six captain's picks for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, joining a squad that already has Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, and Patrick Cantlay, the FedEx Cup champion. Rex, what is your initial reaction to Captain Stricker's decision today?
I think the first four picks went according to schedule, right? I mean, we had a blueprint. We felt like number seven.
We called them
10.
Locks. Yeah, we call them virtual locks.
I think Harry was the only one that you and I maybe waffled on a little bit, but he certainly played well enough to justify a pick. But yeah, when you look at what Tony, Xander, Jordan, and Harris done last year and a half, let's call it, I mean, they certainly deserve to be on that team and then in good fit. So what I want to get into is what he's thinking with these picks. But the final two, we knew were going to come down to a couple of different situations. And in my mind, it's not so much who he picked, Scotty Scheffler being a rookie, being one of them, Daniel Berger, technically a rookie. He's played on a President's Cup team. I'm not quite sure how much I really put into that. What stands out is those two over, let's say, Patrick Reed. Clearly, the captain was not convinced that Patrick was 100% healthy and that he'd be ready to go after the double pneumonia scare that he had over the last few weeks. He said it was a difficult call to make, so that one surprises me a little bit. But I can't say I'm surprised anywhere else. Webb Simpson didn't even qualify for the Tour Championship. So that's always going to be one of those things that is going to stand out in the captain's head. Billy Horschel, Kevin Na, they made good runs at East Lake, but I'm not even 100% sure that Stricker was paying attention at that point. My gut says it's Scotty Scheffler. It's what he did earlier this year, finishing runner-up at the WGC match play. It's sort of that gritty nature that he has, even though he doesn't have a win. I think he was always on Stricker's radar, and no one else gave him a reason not to pick him.
Yeah, look, I think first and foremost, I think Stricker's six picks make the most sense. And I think it really came down to that sixth spot. We've either called them virtual locks, semi-locks, partial locks. I forget what the terminology that we've used over the past couple of weeks. Those first five are not surprising at all in terms of Xander, Jordan, Finau. Harris, for me, was a semi-lock. And then Berger, who is, you know, if you look at any metric, especially the stroke game metric over the past 6 months. I mean, he's been one of the best performing Americans. I know he hasn't won since Pebble in February, but you look at his stats and it does seem like, and we can get into this, that Stricker is relying heavily on his analytics team to crunch numbers in terms of.
I don't know that. I mean, that's a good point. And I want to get into that, but I'm not 100% sure of that. He talked about it at the end of the press conference. He admitted he's not a stats
guy.
I don't think he
has any knowledge of it whatsoever. But none. That doesn't, it's just like an MLB manager. I mean, you look at those guys, they're not necessarily savvy in analytics or sabermetrics or whatever they need to do, but they certainly have some geeks in the back and some stats nerds who know exactly what they're doing and can feed that information. Now it's up to Stricker and his cohorts and his assistant captains to make the best decision using that information. But there is clearly a team of stats geeks who are feeding this type of information. And I think that can only make this U.S. team stronger. And so when you get back to the sixth pick and you look at why he went with Scotty Scheffler, first and foremost, he was right there in 14th in the Ryder Cup points. So it's not like he came out of nowhere here. He mentioned his length off the tee. Although he's not one of the longest players on the PGA Tour, he is 36. He hits it over 305 yards. It's clear that what Stricker and company are going to do is make Whistling Straits a bomber's paradise with very wide fairways that they already have, very little rough and fast greens. I mean, that's the recipe for Americans. It has been the recipe over the past couple of decades on home soil. Also, you mentioned the match play finalist appearance in March while also beating John Rahm and Ian Poulter, who we fully expect to be on that European side. That certainly bode well. And look at the way that Scottie Scheffler played in the biggest events this year. 18th at the Masters, tied for 8th at the PGA Championship, 3rd at the Memorial, tied for 7th at the U.S. Open, tied for 8th in the Open Championship. I know he kind of fell off a little bit during these FedEx Cup playoffs, but it clearly shows that Scheffler has a game that can, you know, stand up to these beefy tracks, these more difficult venues, and he's not afraid of the moment. I really can't argue or nitpick against any of these picks that Stricker made.
I can't, because it's twofold, to your point. I think this was a twofold decision. One, he wanted horses for this particular course. He wants a track meet. And to your point, the one stat that stood out to me, length is always going to be, it's always going to favor the Americans. I'm working on a story that I'm probably going to publish next week, just about how Whistling Straits kind of defies this recent history of captains being able to set golf courses up specifically for teams. But to a certain degree, he will set it up as much as he can as a bomber's paradise. I don't think we'll see
look at the players who have won there over the past decade, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Dustin Johnson didn't win in 2010, but he was certainly right there. Martin Kaymer is not short by any stretch of the imagination. Jason Day, in his heyday back in 2015, one of the longest players on the PGA Tour, and Jordan Spieth was just an all-time heater while he was chasing Jason Day down to the finish line there. I mean, that is a bomber's golf course. There's no doubt about it. VJ won back in the day.
And I think you can go down the list. So when you talk about length, you got Xander 22nd, Tony 31st, you pointed out Scotty 36th, and the rest of them, Harris is 68th, Berger 99th, and Jordan Spieth is 66th on tour and driving distance. So he's skewing in that direction. But the stat that stood out to me, and this was brought up to me by someone who does stats on tour, and I really wanted to take a look at this, it's birdies. He wants this to be a track meet. And when you look at 4 out of those 6 picks rank in the top 25 on the PGA Tour this season, including Scottie Scheffler, number 3. I think that was a huge point. That and the match play win over those quality European opponents, I think, are the two things that gave Stricker the green light in his mind and said, okay, he's a rookie. He hasn't won on the PGA Tour, but he fits into my team room and he fits this golf course perfectly. I think those are the two questions he wanted answers. And I think he got the answer he wanted for all 6 of those picks.
So I want to go over the guys that Stricker bypassed. And we have to start, I think, first and foremost, because it was Stricker's first call, and that was to Patrick Reed. He said he wanted to call him first because he knew it was going to be difficult, but Reed handled it like a, I want to get this right, quote, true champion. And Stricker said that he actually apologized to him many times. You just covered the Tour Championship where Patrick Reed, just 2 weeks removed from being in a hospital bed, fearing for his life because of double pneumonia. He was not cleared for air travel by his doctors, ended up driving 15 hours from his home in Houston to get to Atlanta. How did he look at Eastlake? And are you surprised that Stricker did not opt for him?
He didn't look good. And I don't think he expected to look good. I didn't expect him to look good. He talked about just his speed wasn't there. I mean, when you spend a week in a hospital with that kind of condition, you're not going to be able to bounce back as an elite athlete. It's just not going to happen. And look, Stricker said all the right things. He said he lost sleep. He said it was the hardest call he had to make. Those are the right things. I don't know. I mean, Stricker's a pretty honest guy, but in this particular case, did he really lose sleep over this one? We've touched on this. Like, there were a lot of reasons not to want Patrick Reed on this team, not the least of which is he probably doesn't fit well into this particular team room. Everyone talks about, well, send him and Bryson out. Well, I'm not quite sure.
Send him and Bryson out.
Everyone keeps falling back on this. Like, somehow it's a winning combination. There is no history here. We're just banking on two guys that aren't very popular right now in the public's eye going out and being us against the world. I just don't believe that. There's no statistics that would suggest, yes, that's going to work. So Stricker said all the right things. He has to say those things that he lost sleep. But I don't know. Did he?
I mean, I still – I know you dogged P. Reed on this podcast a couple of episodes ago.
I'm not dogging him. I'm just being honest.
I actually do feel badly for him. I think a month ago he was probably a shoo-in for this team. You think about where he was. He just answered the call to play on that U.S. Olympic team. I mean, with barely any notice, he hops on a plane to Tokyo, jet lag, plays in that competition. When I talked to him on Tuesday of Memphis week, he just returned. I mean, he was riding high at that point. I thought it was an absolute guarantee that he was going to be on that team. And then it just became a disaster from that point forward, whether it was the sprained ankle that he suffered in Memphis and then the double pneumonia that sent him in the hospital and had him fearing for his life. He did not have a top 10 on tour since Memorial, which is in mid-June. So you're looking at 3 months and just not a lot of reps, quite frankly, over the past 5 weeks. It would have been a really hard sell for Stricker to put him on the team. You're basically just banking on him being an absolute dog. And you're only going to probably use him once, maybe twice in that team format. And he opted for probably a little bit more well-rounded pick in Scottie Scheffler. I want to go to a player, Rex, who you were covering quite heavily at the Tour Championship because he was in the mix. He actually tied for the shadow leaderboard along with John Rahm in terms of making just one bogey over 72 holes, and he would have tied the outright title. He split the world ranking points, if not the title, in terms of first and second place world ranking points at the Tour Championship. And that player is Kevin Na. He's played really well over the past month and a half. There was a steady drumbeat of people on Twitter who wanted to see Kevin Na on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Did you believe that that was actually a viable option? Because I'm like you, and you just mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I don't even think he was on Stricker's radar. I mean, you could talk about him all you want. The fact of the matter is he was 19th on the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. He has never had a top 10 in a major championship. It's a beefy golf course, and he's one of the shortest hitters on the PGA Tour. I don't care that he's a great putter and he could get under the skin of the Europeans. If he's putting for par all day, that's not gonna scare anybody.
Well, no, I'm here for Kevin Na. I'm a big fan of Kevin Na. I think when you look at the end of his career, we're going to look at what he was able to do physically, statistically on the golf course, and it's going to be outsized by what he was actually able to accomplish. And I can see it was interesting. I was having a conversation last week with a European, and it got brought up that, why do you think they're such good teammates together and the Americans seem to struggle in the Ryder Cup in this particular format? And he said, it's short games. This isn't a magical solution, that we have good short games. And that when you start talking about match play and momentum swings and trying to edge ahead and you're trying to find some sort of advantage in the margins, it's all about short games. So you could have made an argument,
That's literally the only case for Kevin Na, is that he's a good chipper, pitcher, and putter. That's it.
That's right. That's right. And I just don't see a good fit for him as a partner on that team. He doesn't obviously fit from a distance standpoint, what he's trying to do. And as far as birdies go, I'm not quite sure he's up there for that either, which is, again, what we talked about. It's what Stricker wants. He wants that track meet. So, no, it's a good story. I know the folks on Twitter loved it. I know the folks on Twitter kind of leaned into Billy Horschel as well, who had another good week at the Tour Championship. But I just don't think either one of those guys were ever on his radar.
I think you could lump like Kevin Na, Kevin Kisner, Brian Harman, and Billy Horschel. They're the same person. Like scrappy ball strikers, with the exception of Horschel, like they're very good on and around the greens, and they just kind of have that feisty, dogged personality, right? Like all of those four players, you could have taken any of them. It didn't matter what their name was and just thrown them. And they would have been that prototype gritty grinder that you could have put out in foursomes and maybe gotten you a point. I think the fact of the matter is you look at the question, and we're going to get into player of the year here in just a little bit. And when I'm judging player of the year, I say who played the best golf this season, right? Like that's my barometer. And for the Ryder Cup team, you can look at stats. You can look at personalities. I think the major question, the simplest question that this whole thing boils down to is who are the 12 best American players? That's who I want on the Ryder Cup team. You can fit personalities, you can fit games, whatever the case may be. I want to ride or die with the 12 best players, and we'll see what happens. And I think you have to put Scottie Scheffler in that department. I know he has not won on the PGA Tour, but you look at what his peers say about him. You look at what the stats suggest about his game and the well-roundedness of it. I think you can make a very convincing case that Scottie Scheffler is among the top 12 players on the American side. No doubt about it.
Yeah, on the American side. The one person that stood out that started to get some traction, at least among the rank and file players, the six who had already qualified, quietly was Sam Burns, where suddenly his name started to crop up in more and more conversations. And suddenly you start looking at his record and everything that he's accomplished really over the last year, because you have to take the last 3 years out of the window. But he was the only other name that I felt like it was kind of, when you looked at Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler, I was starting to see the same player. I was starting to see that same gritty player.
Except wins.
There's a big
difference there, yeah.
No, I know. So I think that's something to point out. But the others, no, I don't think so. I mean, to your point, I think what Stricker saw was those statistical categories that he wanted to focus in on, and I think he saw a natural pairing. My guess is it's Jordan Spieth. Like, we can break those down a little bit later, but the Texas connection, there's something there that he saw. So he actually said it was an easy decision, which is not anything a captain usually says on a day like today. So I think he'd had his mind made up for quite a while.
I'm a little surprised, Rex. I think I would have made a stronger case for Webb Simpson. I know he didn't qualify for the season finale, and you know, by his own standards, it was a down year. He struggled with COVID. He struggled with a neck injury, but his stats are still very good. And what we know about Steve Stricker as a player, as a person, is what he's very safe. He's very smart. He's very conservative. Doesn't like to take a lot of chances. And I think Webb Simpson would have filled that spot on the team of like a Stricker captain's pick, right? Like, you know exactly what you're getting out of Webb. He's not the longest player, but he's a terrific guy.
He would have been Steve Stricker.
Like, he's a smart, safe pick. I'm actually a little surprised that he didn't go that direction with Webb. He's a ready-made partner for Bryson. You know he's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. This would have been his third Ryder Cup. I think he has plenty of experience with this. Obviously, he gets along well with the rest of the American team. And I don't even think Stricker was asked a question about him. It seems like Webb had kind of really fallen off the radar, which to me was just a little bit surprising.
No, I think he had a game plan, though. I mean, to your point, I think Webb Simpson was not on that short list. I mean, I'm sure he was on a list, but he wasn't on the short list. But Stricker made it clear right from the outset today in that press conference that he had a plan here. He had no problem taking four rookies. And we can debate the merits of are they actual rookies after playing on the President's Cup, whatever the case may be. Four rookies, they already had two rookies on the team. So half the American side has never played in a Ryder Cup.
You actually asked Shoffley the question, right? Like, do you feel like a rookie?
Of course he does.
There's nothing about these guys that suggests like they're either going to be overwhelmed by the moment, or it's going to be too big for them, or they don't know how to play match play. Like, Cal Morikawa, two-time major champion. He's not a rookie. I don't care what you say. Patrick Cantlay, he's played on a President's Cup team. He paired very well with Xander Schauffele.
Daniel Berger had the winning point at the President's Cup at Liberty National for Captain Stricker. Stricker had the numbers off the top of his head. Rookies are 40, 29, and 17 since the 2008 Ryder Cup, which in his mind, that's a number. My guess is it's on a postage stamp in his office that he kept looking up and seeing and saying to himself, you can only have bad association with memories. When it comes to these players, Webb Simpson,
right. Why do you want experience? Like, what
you don't.
I think it's eight of the last 11 the U.S. has lost. Why do you want guys who have been through the ringer and maybe from a motivation standpoint, Tony Finau and Jordan Spieth spoke very eloquently about that, about being on the green in 2018 in Paris and seeing the Europeans celebrating, how that kind of gnawed at them, and they wanted to make sure that they never felt that again. But you have this entire generation of players, and it even goes down to like a Dustin Johnson, who's been on a number of these teams now. He's 37 years old, but it's the generation of Furyk and Stricker and Phil and Tiger, and you can even throw DJ and guys like Cooch and Zach Johnson. All they know are losses. And so to be able to bring in fresh blood like Harris and Berger and Scheffler and Xander and Cantlay. Like, I think that could only be a positive. And that's why, you know, there was a lot of momentum for guys like Kevin Na that we saw on Twitter, or Kevin Kisner, just trying to break that mold. To me, the Ryder Cup is not the time to try and break that mold. Like, I want to see that in the President's Cup. That's where I want to see you start taking some chances and grooming these other players and getting them a little bit more experience. That's where I want to see a Will Zalatoris next September. That's where I want to see a Sam Burns next September. That's where if Scheffler got bypassed, like I need to see him on that American side, because eventually you're going to have to start working your way towards the future. Like, you know, how many more teams is Dustin Johnson going to be on at his age? You know, Brooks Koepka, he's dealt with a number of injuries. You know, how many more teams is he going to be on? Tony Finau entering the prime of his career, or with the game getting younger at 31, is he, and Harris English at 31?
When did 32 become the new 42? That's the part of the press conference I walked out of. Like, everyone referred to 32 as an older player, a veteran player, and Xander's just kind of shaking his head. Like, when did 32 become 42?
Does that make the European side ancient? I mean, they're going to have, like, two of the picks are locks in terms of Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia. They're both over 40. And you look at the team that's already been established. I mean, Paul Casey's on that squad. Lee Westwood's on that squad. I mean, that team is basically in a nursing home compared to the American side.
Now, as an aside, are you going to shave before you go to the Ryder Cup in 2 weeks?
Not planning on it. We're now 24 hours until my wife gives birth to our baby girl.
Good luck with that. But you may want to.
This is actually a good luck token. I had this when Cam was born, and things went well. I have been told that I look devastatingly handsome by a number of people, including some men. And so I'm going to continue to rock it. I went on TV yesterday. No one had any qualms about it. And so, no, I'm not going to shave. At this point in the podcast, I do think it is time to transition to the Tour Championship.
I feel like you're just being lazy. I know that you feel like this is a good luck charm. But going forward, I feel like you're just being lazy.
No, this still involves some trimming. You still have to shave your neck. No one likes a neared. You have to shave the neck beard. You know, you get some patches on the cheek. I know you're a little older, and you don't really like to do the full beard because it gets a little gray and white in there. So I can understand that. And I like to think of that Dustin Johnson's beard had to die so mine could live. But I also expect DJ, like myself, to be fully bearded by the time.
I don't know what his settings were on the trimmer, but they were perfect. I never wanted him to change that setting. It was always perfect. Yours seems a little scraggly. Maybe you need to adjust yours.
I haven't trimmed it. The only thing I do is you're just shaping it. It's just shaped.
Well, I think
it looks very good. It looks very good. I'm not getting food in it yet.
So yeah, maybe a one or a two on the side. I don't know how you judge that. Maybe a three. I don't know what the measurements are, but you need to get the setting a little bit better than where it is right now.
You and I should both not be talking about any sort of hair length, given our issues, even though I'm 20 years younger. Rex, you did cover the Tour Championship won by Patrick Cantlay. What was a pretty interesting duel with Jon Rahm? Everyone else kind of petered out on Sunday, unfortunately. You are not a fan of the staggered start format. You have never been a fan of that, but this is now 2 years in a row that the number one overall seed entering the Tour Championship has gone on to win. Does that make you any more of a believer that this is the best way to determine the FedEx Cup champion?
Don't make me the litmus test when it comes to stroke plays based scoring. Like, no, I'm not a fan because I feel like it's contrived.
Cantlay hates it and Rahm hate it. That's not good.
Cantlay was asked after winning it because of strokes base. He would have lost in a normal tournament, but after winning it, he said, nope, still hate it. $15 million in the pocket. All the things that come along with winning the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup, all of that. Nope, still not a fan. So don't pin that on me.
What's the solution?
I don't have a solution, and that's the problem. I mean,
criticize it. That is column writing 101. Is you can't just bash something. You have to offer a solution.
I don't think I've ever bashed it. I think I've simply just been the messenger. I think the players have been the ones who have bashed it.
So you have zero opinion on the matter.
No, I think I've made my opinion clear that, look, as much as you may or may not like the format, and I've made this argument until I'm blue in the face and it just keeps getting recycled and recycled because I don't feel differently about it. I still feel passionately. You may not like the format. You may not like it being called the playoffs. You may not like any of the things the tour has done. However, what they've done is create compelling golf during a time of year when usually we don't care about golf, and you get the top players playing together for a significant amount of money. Those are all good things. And so I will give the nod to the PGA Tour. Look, those you're going down the right road. Do we have the playoff format? Perfect. Is it where I think it's going to end up being forever? Absolutely not. It's changed so many times. It's going to continue to evolve. So I don't feel bad when I'm the conduit, meaning from John Rahm to the PGA Tour, of it's a bad system. Like, you don't feel comfortable with this. Like, it's, as you pointed out, second consecutive year, the guy who came in with the lead ended up winning. It's also the second time in 3 years that we've ended up with someone else actually winning. And that's uncomfortable. I don't care who you are. John Rahm looks at that leaderboard because he gets world ranking points. And I learned this last week. You know who else recognizes the actual winners?
Who?
Vegas. So the world ranking in Vegas are the only two that recognize the actual winners. The PGA Tour, they go with strokes based. I found that fascinating.
That is interesting. You mentioned the uncomfortableness of the format. We're still eventually going to have one of these uncomfortable years where there is just an undisputed number one player during the course of the season. Let's say they win. I mean, it's getting harder to win multiple times. Let's say someone just has a monster year. If Rahm just goes nuts next year, wins 5, 6, 7 times, wins a couple of majors, and then he gets to East Lake, snap hooks his opening tee shot, and poof, there goes the advantage that he'd built up the entire season and had just an absolutely monster lead in the FedEx Cup standings, gone with just one swing. That is the disaster that is waiting to happen with this format.
Well, and take the disaster one step further, because that's what John did. When, you know, the analogy the tour official gave him when he was making this argument to the tour that he didn't like the system was, okay, the New England Patriots could go undefeated, regular season, playoffs, make it to the Super Bowl, and lose the Super Bowl. And John's response is, they still finish second. In this scenario, John Rahm hits his first tee shot OB and continues to unravel the rest of the week and finishes 15th, 20th, 25th, I don't know, 30th maybe, if he has to WD, God forbid, for some reason. So you can go from having the most dominant season in the last decade on the PGA Tour to finish 30th on the final points list. And that is an inherent flaw that they have to find a fix for.
I mean, isn't that basically what happened with Colin Morikawa? I mean, Colin Morikawa was number one in the FedEx Cup standings entering the postseason. He finished 28th. He finished 28th. And the reason I bring that up, of course, is because you, like an idiot, with the number one overall pick in our fantasy league, picked Colin Morikawa. The only reason you had the number one pick is just the flip of a coin. You drew it. Obviously, anyone with half a brain would pick John Rahm in that position. But no, not you, Rex Hoggard. You picked Colin Morikawa, who missed the cut in the playoff opener, nearly finished DFL at the BMW, and then finished 28th out of 29 players since Brooks Koepka WD'd, who was also on my team, to have just an absolutely woeful performance in our fantasy golf league. And so, Rex, here's the final standings. Team Lavner, on the strength of Patrick Cantlay winning $15 million and John Rahm banking $5 million, I came down with 28,046,795. Let's call that 28 million. Your grand total was 10 million. I beat you by $18 million when you had the number one overall pick.
What we got into this. This was skewed because you didn't think it through when you just threw it out there on the podcast, that you didn't think it through that there was no purse at the tour championship, that you would only be counting bonus money. And at that point, when you've got when you have the winner at 15 million, it's always going to be skewed. So I would suggest you quit pounding yourself on the chest a little bit here and just admit that, okay, we didn't think this through. Like, the winner is always going to just blow the other guy away.
I mean, you're the one who didn't think it through. You had the number one overall pick and you didn't pick the best player in the world.
I could have gone with John Rahm. You're absolutely right. At the time, neither you nor I nor anyone outside of Colin Morikawa's camp knew that he was struggling with back issues. So, in my defense,
hey, I didn't. Hey, I didn't cover the Olympics. You were covering the Olympics. Did you not see him?
He had just won an Olympic medal. There was no indication. No, he
lost in a playoff. He didn't win a medal.
No, he won a medal, didn't he?
Lost in the playoff. Remember, he lost it to CT Pan.
CT Pan. But it's not like he limped.
He couldn't even beat CT Pan, and yet you're taking it with the number one overall pick.
It's not as though he limped out of that playoff. It's not as though he was grabbing his back and crawling to the finish line. So there was no way for either one of us to know. Again, you're really good at revisionist history. All I'm saying is you didn't think it through on the format. Because with the bonus money, the winner's always going to blow the other guy away, regardless of how good your team had performed up to that point, number one. Number two, I could have gone either way. It was either John Rahm or Colin Morikawa. And as you just said, your own words just 3 minutes ago, as you were yammering on, was Colin Morikawa had an unbelievable year, .. Rex Hawk.
In the regular season.
Yes. So there's the inherent problem.
It actually is an interesting talking point, because – Colin Morikawa has done the exact same thing that he did after the PGA in 2020 that he swore he was not going to do, right? Like he said, he learned his lesson and that he kind of had a drop off and he needed to reassess. You think about what he did at Harding Park last year when he won his first major championship. He went miscut, 20th, 7th, miscut, miscut, which was very un-Colin Morikawa-like. He had more miscuts in a month than he had had the rest of his PGA Tour career to that point. You look at what he's done now on the PGA Tour. You take out his playoff loss for the medal at the Olympics, which was not an official PGA Tour event. He finished T26, miscut, T63, and 28th in what was essentially a 29-man event. You have to have some level of concern, do you not, about Morikawa heading in to Whistling Straits? He was the number one points getter on the American side during qualifying.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think there's no shortage of concerns. We can start with Morikawa and then go straight to Brooks Koepka, who, as you pointed out, had to withdraw from the Tour Championship with another wrist injury. I think both of those things are what Stricker is going to have to worry about. Well, I thought it was interesting, and look, this is kind of inside baseball, but because of COVID, it's clear the PGA of America and the European Tour have some sort of captain's agreement about there has to be someone in the envelope. There has to be a player standing by, ready.
An alternate.
By.
Yeah, there has to be an alternate.
There has to be at least one alternate, maybe even multiple alternates. Because now with the U.S. team, you're talking about two, not one, but two players who may not end up. And look, the way it works is Stricker gets the 7th pick and 8th pick.
Morikawa said he's 100%. He said he's 100% healthy.
Did he look like he was 100% healthy in the playoffs? I know what he said.
Judging by your team output, I would say no.
No. My team is Exhibit A in that conversation. But so it's interesting that, and we all kind of knew that Phil Mickelson was going to be the vice captain if he took it. Like it was his if he wanted it. I'm curious if there was some sort of agreement that, okay, I'll vice captain, but I want to be the first guy off the bench. Or is that going to be Patrick Reed? Because if the captain's to be believed, this was the hardest phone call he had to make, and Patrick handled it very, very well. Are those two alternates, one, 1A, 1B? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think you have to make Webb the alternate, don't you?
I don't know. Why would you have to?
I think he makes the most sense of a player that you can sub in there. Like he's a ready-made Ryder Cup player. I think you can argue that with Patrick Reed as well, but I think Reed's health, obviously at this point, is just too much of an unknown. You give Webb Simpson a couple weeks. I'd be really shocked if Stricker didn't tell Webb, hey, keep your game sharp. I know you want to keep it sharp for the fall portion of the PGA Tour season anyway. It's not like you're going to just go put the clubs away for 3 months. But don't be surprised if you have to make a call as well. Now, Brooks is supposed to be at this practice session. Steve Stricker said he's anticipating every single player and caddy who will be up at Whistling Straits for a practice session over the weekend. They're going to play the golf course, have team dinners, build some camaraderie, potentially talk about some pairings. This is not all that uncommon. They did do this in 2018. Le Golf National obviously didn't help them in what was a European route, did this in 2016 as well, when there was a couple weeks period between the end of the Tour Championship and then the start of the Ryder Cup. And so if they're going to start working on these potential pairings over the weekend, Rex, we can actually help them out. We can help them out on by giving them some advice on who they should have for some of these pairings on the U.S. side. I'll start because there are a couple of obvious ones.
I mean, there's two obvious ones.
The first obvious one is Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. They are very good friends. This is like the new Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth. Like they're very good friends, play a ton of practice runs together. Their girlfriends are close, or swing coaches are close, like whatever the case may be. Like they are going to be trotted out just as they were in the 2019 President's Cup, where they had some success as well. The second one that I do believe we are going to see, no doubt about it, is Dustin Johnson and Scottie Scheffler. They share a management company. They've played a bunch of rounds in the PGA Tour together, including last year during the playoffs, when Scottie shot that 59 and DJ went absolutely bonkers in Boston. They play a lot of practice rounds together as well. I think that is a way to go. You put a rookie with someone like Dustin Johnson, who's been through the ringer in U.S. team competitions as well. Those two are just no brainers. And then I think you can go some places.
Yes. Now I think DJ and Scottie is a good pairing. They seem to have similar personalities. Even your JT and Jordan, you're just going to gloss over. JT literally,
so
not that he needed it, but JT at Eastlake during a press conference, it literally said, "I told Stricker that Jordan has to be on this team, or I'm not going to be on this team." Now he was joking. It was tongue clearly in cheek. However, not that Jordan needs someone out there doing this for him, but it's clear those two are going to play together at some
level. Of course. Yeah, they're going to play together. I also think you can see Daniel Berger with either Spieth or JT. They may want to see, you know, potentially who's playing better that week. Jordan Spieth, you talk about concerns on the U.S. side. He's actually in the midst of his worst stretch of what has been a very resurgent year for Jordan Spieth, while JT certainly appears to be trending in the right direction. So I can see either JT and Berger. I can see Spieth and Berger. They share a swing coach in Cameron McCormick. Play a bunch of practice runs together as well. I think you could see those possibilities as well. But yeah, of course, we're going to see JT and Spieth at some point. I'm just not sure that they're going to be trotted out together in every single team match as they were in Paris together. And then there's a couple interesting guys, and I still don't think we have a definite on who can partner with Bryson DeChambeau. It's not like you can hide Bryson. I mean, the way he's playing right now, he's one of the Americans' best hopes. Now, he has not played well in match play over the past couple of years, whether it was in the WGC event. He did not play well the Ryder Cup in Paris, didn't play particularly well at Royal Melbourne as well. Who are you eyeing as a potential partner for Bryson? I'm looking in particular at Tony Finau and Harris English. I'm curious if you agree.
Tony Finau and Harris English. I like that. I think Tony and BK, Brooks Koepka, paired together well in Paris. So my guess is that's on the captain's radar as well. Harris English stood out to me because he used the phrase twice last week, actually, when he was kind of referring to himself as a Swiss Army knife kind of player. And when we talk about in the context of Steve Stricker, let's face it, he was a Swiss Army knife kind of player for the vast majority of his career. You could work him into any pairing. It's Webb Simpson, right? That's who Webb Simpson sort of took the job from. That in these types of team matches where you had a player that didn't quite have that natural pairing, you could always kind of work it into Webb Simpson. So I could imagine a scenario where Harris and Bryson play together. My guess, it would only be four ball. I can't see that ever working out in alternate shot. That would just be too much for probably both of them because they play such vastly different games. But I think they could make an interesting four ball pairing.
Yeah, I don't think Bryson has a foursomes pairing. Like I think we might only see him in four balls, which, you know, if you're Steve Stricker, you would love someone with Bryson's talents and his skill set on that golf course. It's going to be very wide open in wanting to make a ton of birdies as Bryson does. You would want to get him out there as much as possible. It's the same thing we saw for the U.S. Solheim Cup team. Like you would want Nelly Korda, the world number one, to play a bunch of matches. I can guarantee you, barring some sort of illness or injury, like John Rahm and Rory and probably Victor Hovland are going to be trotted out for all five matches on the European side. You'd love to have Bryson be that guy. Now, who then on the U.S. side do you see playing the most matches? Is it Patrick Cantlay, or do you think that he could potentially be out of gas after he's essentially led for two consecutive weeks? Could it be a guy like Justin Thomas who can pair with a bunch of guys? I actually would have thought Brooks Koepka would be a player that you'd like to see in all five, a player that you can put in both four balls and foursomes. By the way, you're vigorously shaking your head. I can see that you disagree.
Probably not. Now, I probably would have said that even before the injury kind of cropped up, but that's certainly a concern going into it. But I just don't know. And again, I've seen Brooks in enough of these situations. Certainly in Paris, there was a spark there, and you'd like to think that he's going to rekindle that, let's say, with Tony Finau. But I just don't know. Watching him play the last few weeks, there had not been a spark in his game. And we all know the Ryder Cup can change that. It's an entirely different atmosphere, and I'm sure he's going to get fired up for it. I don't see that. I think Xander and Patrick will go all four. There's no doubt in my mind in that one. Unless they just come out and just get walked over on day one and day two. I mean, I can't imagine how you sit that two pairing. I think it's a formidable pairing right now. And Patrick's got 2 weeks off. All of them have 2 weeks off. And I think that's important to point out because they needed two weeks off.
They're playing a weekend at Whistling Straits right now.
I mean, they're going up for a guy's weekend at Whistling Straits. So I'm not going to read too much into that as far as exhaustion goes. And my guess is they took 12 private jets in there. So they're okay. I don't think it's too much of a heavy lift for them. The one that we haven't mentioned that I find curious because, I mean, it seems to me he would be a partner that someone will want is Morikawa. He's number one on the points list as it finished up. As we've pointed out, he's not playing his best golf right now. He says he's 100% healthy, but the changes he made because of the back injury to his swing have kind of left him hitting sort of these slappy fades that I'm well aware of, and I know how much he hates it. So I just don't know where he fits into that. He could probably play with any number of players, but I'm not comfortable breaking up Patrick Cantlay and Xander. Are you?
No. And Colin Morikawa, when he was asked who he thought he could pair well with, he mentioned Xander Schauffele and Justin Thomas. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not sure they're going to break. That's cute. And I'm, everyone would like to play with them, but that's probably not going to happen. You're right. I can see Morikawa and DJ being put together. I mean, Colin's such an affable guy
he can play with anyone. That's such an iron player.
Yeah. But I don't think we're going to see him in every team match, to be sure. So the U.S. team was finalized. We're taping this podcast on Wednesday, immediately after Stricker makes his decisions. Padraig Harrington is going to round out his team on Sunday afternoon, following the conclusion of the BMW PGA Championship, which is the flagship event on the European Tour. He has not just hinted strongly. He has all but said that he is going to pick Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia on that squad. There is some debate, though, Rex, as to who that third and final spot would be for the Europeans. You have any hunch, any inkling, anyone you'd like to see Patty round out his squad with?
It was fun talking with Sergio Garcia the other day about this before he left Eastlake. And look, it's no secret that Padraig Harrington and Sergio Garcia, they're not the typical Europeans that we think of that sing and dance after the victories and have so much fun together. They do not get along. And it's been made clear over the course of their career. However, Sergio played well this season. He made it to the Tour Championship. I think he'd be in a good addition to that team. So I would imagine he would be in there. And I love Bobby McIntyre. I just think he's a compelling figure to me. I like being around him. I like watching him play golf. And I don't know if Harrington feels that same way, but I like both those picks.
So there is the potential to have some shakeups here, which I almost think would make the job easier for Padraig. And the reason why I say that is there's a possibility that Bern Wiesberger could leapfrog Shane Lowry, bump out Lowry for that final automatic spot. Wiesberger actually had an opportunity a couple weeks ago and he blew it on the 72nd hole, had an opportunity to win, made double bogey and cost himself not just the European Tour title, but a spot among those automatic qualifiers as well. I think that scenario would actually be the best for Padraig. Someone like Bern Wiesberger who earns his way in, bumps out Lowry, and then Lowry is just a no-brainer captain's pick. I'm not sure Bern Wiesberger would play very many matches on the European side. I don't think they necessarily need him because they have so many strong horses. But that's a scenario that kind of takes the pressure off of Harrington, because let's say Lowry is one of those automatic qualifiers. Then you're picking between what? Justin Rose, Bobby Mack. You could even go down to Stenson, who has played better over the past couple of weeks. Your boy Victor Perez, who you dogged actually correctly on this podcast uh, a couple of times. Actually, I have to tip my hat to you.
He's a huge human being. After I saw him at the match play, I completely did enormous. I completely did a 180, and he's an enjoyable person to be around.
He is. I mean, Guido Migliozzi is not going to be on this team. Guido. I mean, it's kind of slim pickings, and so I bet you Harrington's hoping that you have a scenario like Wiesberger playing well this week that can just kind of.
How about the two Hogarths? How about that?
Rex.
They just won back-to-back weeks.
I know. Rex and Nikolai.
It's not Rex.
His real name is Rasmus. But Rasmus. If you look at Rasmus Højgaard real quick, it looks like Rex Højgaard.
I'm thinking that's the way my family name is actually supposed to be.
Probably.
Written. Yeah. So I should just change it to that. I find it interesting. We just sit and spent 45 minutes talking about sort of all the good and the bad on Steve Stricker's team. Let's don't ignore the bad on Harrington's team. There is no Molinari. There is no Frankie. There could be an Eduardo.
That's actually a good thing. Depending on how he's playing right now.
No, because he's playing terrible, but those horses that they depended on 5-0 in Paris between Tommy and, Frankie, they're not there anymore. So he has to be a little bit more creative this time around. So going down to it again, I'm going to fall back to Sergio Garcia. He's a horse. He's someone that's been there before. Certainly Ian Poulter's going to be in the mix. I love me some Henrik Stenson. I just haven't seen enough. Not even over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. I think you can make a case for Alex Noren certainly. And I think you do make a good point about the European side. They don't have the depth that the US does, but you could also make the counter argument.
Here we go again.
That their good is better right now than the Americans' good. Like, just go ahead and tell John Rahm, Roy McIlroy, Victor Hovland, and maybe even Paul Casey, like, yo, we're sending you out there for five matches. Like, gear up.
I think this is going to be a 1995 match. I think what you're going to end up with is a bunch of dudes on both teams. So they're going to have their two or three pairings that they're going to lean on for both sides. And there's going to be a lot of guys sitting on the sideline clapping.
Could not agree more. I think you're going to see a lot of guys who play just one team match before we get to the singles. Rex, I do want to get real quickly, since this podcast has already been outsized as we anticipated in this reactionary podcast. Who's your pick for PGA Tour Player of the Year?
That one is tough because I did what I did. And I'm, so you're asking me, but that this is me trying to be the messenger.
That was me setting you up for just to pounce on you.
So John Rahm, was the easy choice early in the week. And I was amazed. I mean, I think I talked to 25 out of 30 guys last week at Eastlake, and all of them eventually got to John Rahm with one win, big win, US Open, Torrey Pines. We all know what he did there. Probably one of the coolest victories of the year right there alongside some others, as we talked about last week. I think most guys give him what happened at Memorial, six stroke lead, going in the final round, test positive for COVID. So they'll give him two. I don't know how or if that changes because of what Cantlay did. So now he has four victories. He has the FedEx Cup. There's a recency bias. Those ballots went out immediately after Eastlake. So the only thing players are going to have fresh on their mind is, oh, Patty Ice did it again. Maybe he's our guy. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a tough vote for me. If I had to vote for it, and we have seen this trend over the last few years, certainly 2019 being the example, players are giving the FedEx Cup champion, the FedEx Cup, more weight than they have in the past, as opposed when compared to major championships. It's why Rory won in 2019 and Brooks Koepka did not. So I think they do the same thing this time around, and it's Patty Ice.
I really do hope that the PGA Tour membership goes past the surface level of just wins. Because if you look at wins, there's no brain. It's obviously Cantlay. I mean, four wins is two more than any other player. John Rahm only had one officially. So I would hope they would go deeper than that surface level. Because here are John Rahm's ranks. First in scoring average. First in top tens, and it's not even close. First in official money. That's not including the FedEx Cup bonus. Like, official money. First in birdie average. First in strokes gained tee to green. First in strokes gained total, which is a measurement of a player's performance in every area throughout the bag. He's first in world ranking, and he finished second in the FedEx Cup, although he was tied for first with the low score at Eastlake when it was coming down to who could play the best. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that John Rahm played the best golf during the 2020-21 season, like, What more do you need to know? And as I said earlier in this podcast, like 50 minutes ago, the barometer for this is who played the best golf during the PGA Tour season. If you watch John Rahm play golf, you cannot tell me that he didn't. You look at some of his finishes in the big events. You mentioned the U.S. Open. He finished top nine or better in the Players Championship, all four majors, and every single FedEx Cup playoff event.
Well, technically, there were six majors, so you're glossing over two of the majors that included in the super season. So include those.
Okay.
Which he did not finish top 10. However, very, very impressive performance. And it's why, again, to a man.
Patrick Cantlay, just to button up that point, did not finish better than 15th in any of those events, including their two majors during the super season.
I get it. And this is you're shooting the messenger here, because all I'm trying to say is through 54 holes, it was very, very squarely John Rahm, because competitive chops, like instead of reading stats, which is such a good thing to do on a podcast, because I'm sure everyone wants to hear you read stats on a podcast. If you just look at what he did from a competitive standpoint, you would have to agree he was the player of the year by any metrics that you just pointed out. There is going to be, as I pointed out, a recency bias. What have you done for me lately? There's going to be prisoners of the moment that got that email on Monday from the PGA Tour and went, well, yeah, I'm going to go with my FedEx Cup champion. And I don't know how much they're really going to put into that. I don't think they're going to take the deep dive on the stats like you did. 70% of John Rahm starts were top 10 finishes this year. That is Tiger-esque. And I completely agree with you. I just think guys are giving the FedEx Cup more and more weight, and Patty Ice gave them a reason to vote for someone else.
As always, it's going to come down to will tour members even vote?
Okay. The tour members' managers are going to be prisoners of the moment. I'll go that far.
that's what it's going to come down to. Is the tour manager going to open up that email, click on the box, and push send?
Or just roll their eyes and delete the email. That's probably going to be more likely to happen.
Just go to the bathroom, open up your phone. It takes 5 seconds, man. This is not hard.
It's not hard. And I will say this. It was interesting. Early in the week, last week, Stuart Sink was asked. I asked him. And he immediately just popped off with Bryson DeChambeau. 2 days later, he finds me. I know. You're recoiling, for those of us not in a visual medium right now. When he sees me 2 days later, he calls me to the side. And he goes, I didn't think that through. I just kind of blinked when you asked me. And he goes, I was just thinking headlines and, you know, who have
we're
I
not,
read
we're not, the most? We're not asking who's going to win the PIP.
That's exactly where I went. And he immediately went to John Rahm for all the reasons we pointed out. And I go, so you just told me who's going to win the PIP. And he goes, yeah, probably that's who's going to end up winning the PIP. And to be clear, Tiger Woods is actually going to end the PIP. It's just, I think Bryson's going to be in that top five. And then we can figure out the other.
If Tiger wins the PIP while literally being MIA for 7 months, then those metrics that they've come up with that the tour has needs to be reevaluated. Like, Bryson deserves that $8 million after what he has endured off the golf course in 2021. just give it to the poor. Just give it to the poor guy.
Let me give you a glimpse. Let me just give you a taste here. I'm taking a deep dive into the PIP next week. So let's hold off on doing the pod.
What a tease.
Well, how about that? I'm taking a deep dive into the PIP, and I'm going to have – I got some stuff for you. I'm going to drop some knowledge.
Good, because I will be absolutely vacant and have nothing to offer – on the podcast with a newborn, very much in the throes of
congratulations
environment in the Lavender household. Well, thank excited. You very much. As we sign off, it is now 24 hours. The countdown has officially begun until Lily Lavender makes her world
Lily
debut. Yeah, Lily Lavender, L-I-L-Y, Lily Lavender.
Nice.
You like it?
That. I do like it? That. What's the middle name?
Marie, that's my wife's middle name, and she got it from some other family member. So I guess we'll just continue that lineage. I am excited. The NFL season starts on Thursday night. We should be recovering in the hospital room together as the NFL season gets kicked off and my fantasy league very much gets underway as well. Rex, enjoyed it as always. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. We'll talk to you next week. I will be very, very tired.
Lily will be around.